Welcome to Dialogue Podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Sebastian, and I am literally fresh off the plane from Las Vegas, except whatever the opposite of fresh is. I am ragged. I was in Las Vegas for CrimeCon. It was a total blast. I was very busy, but it was just so worth it. So much fun, so much work, but I couldn't have had a better time. And I loved meeting listeners. Thank you so much to everybody who came to my table to say hello. I loved meeting new listeners. And I want to give a special shout out and hello to Kayla of the True Crime Exposed podcast, a listener of the show who then started her own show. Congrats. Go check out True Crime Exposed. I want to say hi to Susan and Joanna. Joanna was the first person to ever ask me for my autograph, and I tried to be cool and low key. I think I was in front of her, but fully freaked out after, told my kids about it. And I want to say hello and send so much love to Erin and Shannon, two women who have been longtime listeners of the show that I've never until this weekend met in real life. So that was also a real treat. I can't wait to tell you more about CrimeCon. I met so many people, many of whom will be upcoming guests here on the show. In fact, the next series I'm going to do will be called Crime Conversations. Get it? Crime Conversations. Colon, people I met at CrimeCon. So get excited for that. But for today, because my voice is so tired, I am doing a replay of a very popular episode, one of the most requested guests, one of the most downloaded episodes from way back in 2020. It's with the one and only Patrick Hines. And I promise you will get the Patrick you know and love, but you're also going to see a different side of him, which was super fun. And speaking of Patrick Hines and the Obsessed Network, I will be appearing at their premier true crime festival in September called Obsessed Fest. I mean, doesn't that just sound fun? I'll be repping Dialogue, of course, and hosting True Crime Trivia throughout the weekend. The game is going to include all your favorite podcasters, and attendees will also get to participate. It's just, there is no way this isn't going to be super, super fun. So go to my show notes and or the Obsessed Network for more details about Obsessed Fest. It's in Columbus, Ohio at the end of September, and I will be fully recovered and ready for another event by then, I promise. Now, don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review for Dialogue, and let's kill the small talk with the obsessively energetic and wonderful Patrick Hines. Patrick Hines, welcome to Dialogue, a true crime conversation. I am so happy you're here.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. This is so fun. I'm thrilled to do it.
Good, me too. I wouldn't say it's a long time coming for you, maybe, but for me, it feels like it because I've listened to you for years now.
Oh my God.
And we met at CrimeCon, but you met a lot of people at CrimeCon, and I hadn't launched this yet. Oh. I was just there like a person, and the idea was planted, and I had the trailer, but I was kind of going around handing out my postcard for Dialogue, and I met you and Jillian. So it feels cool to have you here.
Thank you so much. Which CrimeCon was it? Was it Nashville or New Orleans?
It was New Orleans, just last year, which feels like an eternity, doesn't it?
It feels like 100 years ago. I mean, honestly, it feels like a lifetime ago. I barely remember it.
I know, it's a bit of a blur. I think that's kind of the nature of the event. And then the fact that what's happened from then till now.
Yeah.
Totally wild.
And I know.
None of us could have imagined, right?
I know.
In other circumstances, we might have been meeting in person because I'm in New York too. But,
I'm
home. Yeah, I'm in Queens. I'm in Long Island City.
Oh my God. You're very close to me. We're right in Midtown. So we are literally less than a mile from each other right now.
Which is wild, I think, for people outside the city to understand too.
Yeah.
Sometimes for me, like I'll be bringing my kids somewhere and it's like 1.7 miles and it takes 35 minutes. And
I know.
What is my life?
I'm also that New Yorker that now misses the subway. Like I haven't been on the subway since March, which is bananas. Like that, you know, the subway is such a part of our life here, but I haven't been on the subway since March.
I went once, the first time a couple of Fridays ago, somebody asked me to lunch, an outdoor lunch, and it was on Hudson Yards, which is at the end of the 7 train. I'm at the 7 train. To drive or to Uber seemed so stupid that I'm just like, it's time, just get on the subway.
Yeah, and I would go. I would, you know, we are so safe. We never really see anybody. We've gone out to dinner like maybe twice to the outdoor dining. We go super early, so there's no one there. But you know what? I would, like, the subway is a sense, even though you're in a car, like it is like the stations are essentially outside. Like I would, I think if I needed to, I would go on the subway. Plus, the infection rate in New York City has been really low. New Yorkers are really, really working hard. Like, I think for the most part, I'm very proud of our city.
Me too. Me too. I think we learned really early on when we got it and the rest of the country seemed to not be. And
yeah,
I don't know. That was a weird, weird time to be here, as you know. And then we kind of buckled down and did what we need to do. And I just hope we can maintain where we are.
Yeah. And I'll yell at you if you're not wearing a mask. Like, I'm that bitch that will literally like scream at people when they're not wearing masks. Also, guys, cover your goddamn noses. It doesn't count if you're just covering your mouth. Well, I mean, you think I like it? You think I like covering my nose? No, we all got to do it, girl. Though.
I don't think you like covering your mouth or your nose, but you do it.
Look, we got to get back to happy hour at the bar, you guys. We cannot, I cannot live without happy hour much longer. Please do it for me. No. Do it for the gays.
There's too much to look forward to in 2021. So please, let's just keep doing what we're doing. And then some. But okay, you're obviously the host of True Crime Obsessed, and you may not know, but November for Dialogue is going to be a series, and it's going to be all true crime podcasters. So I'm so happy you're part of that, because True Crime Obsessed is about the collective obsession around true crime, right? So talk to me about young Patrick and when the true crime obsession started. Was it adolescence? Was it adulthood? Yeah.
You know, I was that nerd that like, and there's so many of us that are like this. I grew up like fascinated by like Bigfoot and the Bermuda Triangle, like that sort of like unsolved mysteries was huge part of my life when I was a kid. You know, as far as I remember, true crime wasn't so much a thing back then, like in the 90s, like in the early 90s, you know? And so that was where it kind of started, and that sort of evolved into, you know, when podcasting became a thing, I became super, like, obsessed with podcasting. I also, like, loved nonfiction books. Like, that was a real passion of mine. Documentaries were something that I was always really fascinated by. So it is, like, certainly I have a love for true crime, but I think it mostly comes from, like, nonfiction stories, like real things that happened about real people, and really, you know, like if like back in the day, if something had a book about it, then it was a crazy thing. Like that's, you know, it had to be crazy for there to be a book or a documentary about it. So I've always just been sort of really fascinated by fantastic, crazy stories, and true crime, like every true crime story fits into that, you know?
That's exactly right. And I never really made that connection for myself, but memoirs are what I kind of got my hands on as a young girl, young teen. Like, I wanted the memoirs because that was where the real stuff was.
Me too. What are your favorite memoirs?
Oh, I really like a good addiction story.
Oh, yeah.
Mary Carr Lit.
Yes. Oh, my God. Did you read the J.T. Leroy books when they came out?
No.
J.T. Leroy was like, they were kind of memoir-y, but then it turned out that he was all a fake and a fraud. But like Mary Carr was his mentor. Yeah.
Yes.
I really love, did you ever read A Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius by Dave Eggers?
No, but I know quite a bit about it.
Such a great, I could talk about memoirs forever. I love them.
So the diagonal stack back there, it's mostly memoir. It's Anne Lamott.
Yes.
It's mostly women. And it's mostly memoir. I probably should read some more men's point of view.
What was the one about, was it Glass Castles or something?
The Glass Castle, Jeanette Walls.
Yes. I mean, that book was amazing.
It was amazing. And I love that you brought it up, because to me, why I love true crime is I think it's a vehicle to talk about all these other things. So I actually find I'm not super interested in talking about grisly murders. That's not what's usually at the heart of
totally. Yeah.
But it's like addiction and trauma and violence and the way people relate to one another, especially when they are related, not just like this scary serial killer guy, but like in your own household. So I like that you're bringing that out. So then where does this happen, and talk about your career? You started out kind of in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, well, so I moved to New York. So I went to college for musical. I wanted to go for musical theater. I wanted to be like a musical theater actor. I was not gifted in that arena. Okay. So I actually like was never accepted into the musical theater program at Emerson. I sort of kind of became a communications major. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I started interning. Boston is a great city to intern. And so I interned at a great radio station called Kiss 108. On their morning show, and I loved that environment. And then I interned at the NBC affiliate in Boston, WHGH, on one of their like weekend news shows, and I really loved that. And then I got a job at CNBC, like right out of college, as it was called a news associate. So basically, I was the sort of like assistant to all of the producers. I was terrible at the job. CNBC was a terrible fit for me, like a very conservative environment. Everyone was very nice, but it was just a really, really bad fit. And so that was when I sort of was like, I want to be a writer. I'm going to go get a bartending job and do that and try to like make ends meet. I wrote 2 books. Both of them got published. But they were in the LGBT genre. One of them was a memoir that I wrote for somebody else.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was cool. And, you know, and I kind of like just was sort of going in that direction, being a bartender. And then podcasting came around, and I discovered podcasting in like 2014. I discovered podcasts in general. And yeah. I was working as a hotel concierge at the time, and I just loved listening to them. And then that sort of evolved into making them. I was making Broadway podcasts back then.
Right.
And it just, I don't even really know, you know, my daughter was born, and I decided I wanted a more regular life. So I transitioned out of like direct hospitality and got I was like an executive assistant for somebody for this like little company in Midtown. Another truly terrible fit that requires a lot of organization. I am terrible at that. And I got laid off. And that was when my husband was like, I really think you need to make a go at this podcasting thing. And it was right about then that Jillian and I started True Crime Obsessed. And I was like, okay, I guess we'll see. And we just poured our heart and souls into it. And it worked out.
It more than worked out, I would say. I mean, look at you now. What year was it? Did you actually start the first episode? 2017?
2017 was when the first episode came out. We started like any podcast I've ever made. We start working on it like 5 or 6 months before the thing comes out. Our original idea was we were going to solve the Zodiac, not like investigate. We were going to solve the Zodiac. We were going to like go to San Francisco and like we were going to solve
the ones. Yeah.
We were going to be the ones. And I remember like we made that decision and she went home that night. And then I texted her the next day. I was like, girl, I don't think I'm really up for solving the Zodiac.
if no one else has done it. Yeah. And look, I'm not taking away from you guys. You're pretty brilliant when you put your heads together.
Thank you.
And we won't, you know, leave that possible. We'll leave that open. But maybe something was just like, it might
something else
go somewhere. It might be anticlimactic if it doesn't happen.
Yeah, and I also really wanted to make something that was like weekly. I didn't want to make a limited series. I wanted to make something that we were going to commit to doing every week. Right. And, you know, the original idea for True Crime Obsessed was very nerdy. It was not meant to be funny at all. I mean, we never set out to make a true crime comedy podcast. We were
interesting.
Yeah, we didn't know each other that well. I didn't know Jillian was funny. We sort of met through the Broadway podcasting world. And the idea was we were going to do a show in 3 segments. It would be an interview segment and then a middle segment where we talked about a thing, like a review / not so much a recap, but just sort of talking about it. And then the final segment was going to be like a true crime news segment or something like that.
Wow, that's
and
we a were, lot.
I know. And that was going to be every week.
That's
I know.
Really ambitious.
So ambitious. And so we sat down to do it. And I remember we got to the part where we were like going to talk about something. So we decided we would both watch the documentary, The Imposter, and talk about that. And it turned into us like sitting down with our notes and talking about it. And she was cracking me up. And I thought it was like in the first episode, you'll hear me like go away from the microphone because I feel like it's not appropriate to laugh. And so I'm like trying to hide the laughing. And I went back and I listened to it. And I was kind of just like, you know, like we weren't finding jokes at the expense of the crime or at the expense of the victims. And so it was kind of like, I think this works. And certainly we were not the first people to like do a true crime comedy podcast, but when it came to true crime documentaries and doing it in that way, nobody else was really doing that. And so I was like, maybe we can make a mark. Like it's hard then, it's hard now to break into the true crime podcasting world. But I was like, this is different. I guess we'll see if it works.
Right. And I love happy accidents, right? Where you were like, that wasn't the plan, but that's clearly what's working. And it's clearly what's resonated all these years and make people come back for more.
Yeah.
But how scared were you? Because, you know, comedy and true crime, there's so much criticism around it. And I think, you know, you've had enough success and you have enough loyal followers and fans to know, obviously it's working more than it's not.
Yeah.
But how did you get over that initial, like, I hope this lands right? Because well, I think people are quick to make their statement or judgment about that.
Yeah. I mean, How do I explain it? Like, so if you think about a podcast like My Favorite Murder, right? Those women, they're so brilliant and they're so, like, funny and they're so authentic. And, like, you know, I sort of fell back on that idea of, like, well, look what they did. Like, yeah. they just went out and they just did it, right? Like, they did it, they put it out. And it is, like, it is its own thing. But like most true crime comedy podcasts, no one is like, oh, she was so dumb, she shouldn't have gotten in the car. It was never that. And so when I realized that, like, A, there was a precedent for it, and B, we really were not finding the humor, and we still weren't even committed to making we didn't even call it a comedy podcast right. In the beginning. We were just being ourselves and being very careful to make sure we were always being respectful. You know, Jillian is very, like, on top of getting everybody's names right and date of everything right. And, like, you know, we sort of realized that, like, the instant feedback we were getting was that, oh, this is a story I didn't know about, and I was always a little bit afraid to learn about it because it was so gruesome, but I'm able to listen to you guys talk about it because you guys find light in it. And it's not always finding humor. Sometimes it's just finding light, you know? And, like, and so I think that was sort of what we knew we were coming from the right place, and we knew that we were defensible and defendable, because mm-hmm. if you ever went and listened to our episodes, you would know that we, like, all we are is respectful of the victims.
Yes.
You know, and now, so we felt like, okay, then we can do it. And, you know, whenever we read an iTunes review or somebody says something on Twitter that's like, I don't think it's appropriate to laugh about murder, well, then we know you've never listened to an episode, because that we've literally never done that, you know?
Right, right. I think it's just hearing laughter in the mm-hmm. true crime genre and people freak out.
Yeah. But, you know, I always say to people, if you think about it, these stories need to be told, right? And they need to be kept in they need to be, like, there are so many cases of shitty things that happen to people, and there is a lesson to be learned in every one of them. Right. And I think the way that we learn those lessons is we keep talking about it. And if we can find new and interesting ways to keep these cases in the dialogue, to keep these cases being talked about, then there's value there, you know? And so we tend to, like, find humor around the edges of things, and that you know, you never know who's going to be the person who's going to have the thing that solves the murder or whatever, you know. And maybe that person, you know, was found, like, you know, learned that this thing had happened because they were listening to a true crime comedy podcast. It's a very roundabout way to say that, like, it is a legitimate, I totally hear that, like, any laughter whatsoever is inappropriate, but, like, who hasn't laughed in church? Who hasn't, like, you know, like,
yes,
it happens.
Laughter is a coping mechanism, first of all. So finding a show like yours, like you said, to expose more the levity than the humor, to where, like, we can all talk about this and we can know it's uncomfortable, and there's going to be some giggling around ancillary matters, not the core of the crime.
But then sometimes it is like, you know, like, you watch Abducted in Plain Sight and you have to scream about the parents. Like, you just have to scream about them, you know what I mean?
Well, yes. And when I watched Abducted in Plain Sight, I surely thought we were being punked, that this was a parody or a satire of a true crime documentary. I was sure of it. I was waiting for the reveal of someone to be like, just kidding. Like, we made this all up, because it was so unbelievable. And you took that obviously and ran. Prior to Dialogue, I still do, I host a true crime trivia show. So same idea.
Oh.
And it's in New York City. So when I start going back to live shows, you got to come.
Yes.
But I got some attention from people to maybe move it into the TV space. And I didn't even, interesting that it hadn't occurred to me, but somebody said, you know, I like it, but I'm not sure how to sell gamifying death. And I'm like, okay, please come to my show.
Because if you
know me or the show, you will know that we are not making a game of really tragic events. And there's education involved, but it's mostly like galvanizing people who care about these things, who have all these factoids, don't know what to do with them. It's almost like another version of, like, laughter. It's like, what do I do with all this? So this was like a way friends could gather, and we gave money to the Innocence Project, so it was like a good cause thing. So I don't know what that guy was talking about. But anyway, I digress. But I think what it speaks to is the genre is expanding, right? So since you've been on the show and done your show, what changes have you seen within the true crime community and genre? Have you seen any?
You know, I mean, there's just always more and more and more, you know, which I welcome. I mean, I think, you know, I think all these stories need to be told. I think we sort of need to destigmatize the idea of thinking about true crime as something people are fascinated by. It's okay to be fascinated by these things because, like I said, every crime has some sort of lesson that can be learned from it. And I think that, like, also, you know, what we've seen with our show is the community that has developed around the podcast, right? So we have a Facebook group that has over 30,000 members in it. And people come there for support. They come there because the people who are interested in these sorts of things tend to be like-minded people. And so you can find support on days that you need it. You can find community and friends. And when we used to do live shows, people who had never met before would meet at, like, they would do meetups at live shows and sort of, like, you know, and find community. And I think, you know, that's, I haven't seen a lot of change since we've started, you know, but I have just seen that the genre continues to expand. I think something that has been such a pleasant surprise for me was, you know, being an openly queeny out gay man who sounds the way that I sound, would there be a place for me in that world among not just listeners, but among my peers in the, you know, who also do what I do? And everybody has been so loving and embracing of me, which, you know, I didn't know how that was going to go in the beginning. I really didn't know if people were going to like me, if people were going to be freaked out by me, you know? And so it's been, I mean, that's been a really... Really, everybody who I've met in this world is just so damn lovely, you know?
I have found that to be true as well. I think the community is a pretty generous one and inclusive, and that's always such a treat to find out. And also maybe another happy accident of, like, who knew the true crime community? Like, I think there's maybe this idea that's very dated of, like, some macabre, like, dark back corner kind of group of people, but, like, not so much at all from what I've, from what I've seen, which is so refreshing. And a lot of people want to make the world a better place. There's a lot of, like, advocates and people who really want to do things and take what they're interested in and apply it. So I'm excited that you've had that traction around your show. Has the growth been scary at times? Like, were there times where it just felt like it took off with, not without you, but it's so big. How do you, because I know, you brought up My Favorite Murder. Like, there was a point they had to shut down their groups because they so wildfire, right? So how do you deal with that?
Yeah, you know, so in terms of the growth, in terms of, like, building an audience, it's something that we've worked really, really, really hard on. We have meetings about it several times a week. How do we find new people? How do, you know what I mean? How do we keep engaging? How do we get better at engaging? It is always, always on our minds. We are always trying to find new listeners. The, you know, in terms of, like, the community that's been built up around the show, it is challenging because, you know, like, especially in a Facebook group of 30,000 people, you know, and, like, with the dumpster fire that is the world right now, you know, people have, there's a lot going on. And, you know, there's a lot of people with disparate views that like true crime that find themselves in the same Facebook group. And then all of a sudden, one post is, one thing is posted, and that can literally take over our day, is just dealing with that one thing. And so we had to figure out a way to deal with that. We brought on really amazing and talented moderators in the Facebook group. We've, you know, instituted a lot of rules. But, you know, it is mind-blowing. Like, I mean, it is mind-blowing to see the growth, you know, and to see, like, now that we have the network and we have all these other shows that we're making, it does feel bigger than me. And in a lot of days, that's a good thing. There are definitely my days that I'm like, I can't do it all. You know, it does definitely get overwhelming. But it's a, you know, it's a thing that I have built with, like, you know, very talented people that I love very much. And so I feel grateful, especially now that I have a job. And, you know, I'm just trying to keep up, which I think is, it's a good and lucky problem to have.
Our new partner has a product that I cannot wait to start using. I just got back from traveling and I cannot wait to start taking Athletic Greens. I didn't eat well, I didn't rest well, and I am so ready to reset my system. I want better gut health, more energy, and what I'm really looking forward to is removing all these pills and vitamins from my daily routine and taking a supplement that actually tastes good. One scoop of Athletic Greens you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. They help start your day right, and it's a special blend of ingredients that support your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. Literally all the things I want to improve. Now, there's a lot of reasons to love Athletic Greens. I'm excited because it's lifestyle friendly. So if you're vegetarian or vegan or keto or paleo, gluten-free, dairy-free, it's going to work for you. I'm most excited that it contains less than 1 gram of sugar. I hate products that are telling me they're healthy and are pumped up with sugar, which completely reverse all the healthy effects. Now you might be wondering, is something like this really expensive? And I'm going to tell you, it is cheaper than your Starbucks order. I can guarantee that. It will cost you less than $3 a day to get everything I mentioned before. Now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/emerging. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/emerging to take ownership of your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. One more time, athleticgreens.com/emerging, EMERGING. The link is also in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah. So talk about the network. When was the moment where you're like, well, there's more stories I want to tell? I imagine that was part of
it. For sure. I mean, you know, back, you know, I can't even remember when now, but when True Crime Obsessed became my job, and you know, that kind of became the thing that I did every day.
Can I ask how long was that? I'm just so curious, from starting the show to when you were like, I can focus on this fully financially.
Yeah. How long? It was probably a year, I think. Okay. I mean, that's a number that sounds about right when we started making enough money that I could, like, this could be my job. Mm-hmm. And then when it really took off, where Steve was able to quit his job and manage us, which we desperately needed. We needed, because, you know, Jillian and I aren't, like, numbers people. We're, like, creative people, you know?
Yeah.
And we were starting to tour, and we had to go to L.A. for meetings a lot. And we were, like, so it was, like, we needed somebody who could, like, manage that. And that was when we, like, really felt like we made it, was when Steve came on board. But you know, it was around that time that I always knew that, like, I was never going to be happy just doing one thing. Mm-hmm. I knew that, like, and also that I had some kind of responsibility that, like, if I had this success and we had a little bit of money, that I wanted to bring up other podcasters and sort of, you know, help other people contribute to this world. And, you know, we were so fortunate, like, after so many years of other podcasts and learning podcasting and, like, getting to a place where it was actually our job, we wanted to give back a little bit and sort of make a network where other people could be brought in, you know? And so that's what we did, you know? I mean, the first like network podcast that we made was Obsessed with Abducted in Plain Sight,
which I made
with Sky Borgman, who is the director of the film. And that ended up being something that was completely different than what we set out to make, but it was sort of like the thing that ended up getting made.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then, my best friend Ellen Marsh and I make Obsessed with Disappeared, which is a weekly podcast where we recap episodes of, IDs Disappeared. And then we brought in the wonderful, investigative journalist, Maggie Freeling, and she makes Unjust and Unsolved with us, which is incredible. And next week we're launching our new podcast with Amber Hunt.
I just read that.
And Amber's podcast is called Crimes of the Centuries, where each week she does, like, this incredible deep dive storytelling on these crimes that were huge when they happened, but, like, had been sort of, like, lost to history. And then we have another new podcast coming out in January, which I can't really talk too much about yet, but I'm so excited about it.
What's the most broad thing about it you could say without giving it away?
What's the most broad thing I can say about it? It's a storytelling podcast in the true crime space.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very excited to hear what it is. And I had Maggie on just a couple weeks ago.
I know.
Which was so much fun. And she's a Queens girl too. So obviously.
Yes. She's so funny because you think she's going to be kind of like sassy.
Or edgy.
But, Oh yeah, and then like you, and then like you talk to her, and she's like, "Hi, my name is Maggie. I know. I'm just very, very nice and smart."
Exactly, and gosh, how refreshing and not intimidating.
I know, but she seems like she's going to be intimidating, right? And then she totally isn't.
She does. No, she's not. She's so lovely, and in fact, we're going to go catch an exhibit at MoMA PS1 in Long Island City. They're doing an installation by artists who were incarcerated. So I saw it and amazing. I was like, Maggie, this is right up your alley. And nobody else I know would be interested in that.
Yeah.
So here we are.
That is so great.
She was part of my Justice Injustice series, which I did in September, October. I'm in the middle of a cult series. And then, like I told you, you're going to be part of Podcasters.
Yay. I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm a cult expert because we've covered like 3 or 4 documentaries about cults. So now I'm an expert.
Yeah, I like to, here's what my husband says about me. I know more about NXIVM than any woman who isn't in NXIVM should.
Oh my God.
It's not okay.
We're covering The Vow right now on Patreon.
I know, I'm dying. Obsessed. I need to, but yeah, cults are, so is that like your subset of true crime?
No, I am so bored by cults. I am like not into them at all. I will say that.
That's so interesting.
I know. I will say that The Vow is fascinating because it's so well made, but normally cults bore, like we covered what was that Netflix one about the Rajneeshis, Wild Country.
Oh yeah, I actually couldn't get through that.
No, I'm just bored. I'm just like, you guys are all idiots, like I'm just not into it. I would say the thing that like I'm the most like fascinated by is like missing people, disappearances. I just don't get, like, you know, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to make Obsessed with Disappeared, because like I especially the ones where there just still aren't any answers, you know, it's just like, how do people just vanish?
I know. So how could you just pick one, but which is the one that just has your brain hurting? And if you could just know the ending and the outcome and what happened, you would.
I mean, I always say Maura Murray. I really want to know what happened there. Definitely like the murder of Haman Lee. I would really, really like to know what really happened
there. That's mine. Yeah.
There's another one. It was an episode of Disappeared that we covered from season 1. It was a kid named Lee Cutler, who, it's a really, really fascinating and sad case of a kid, like a high school kid who just literally just dropped out, you know, like he just dropped out and like he got in his car. They found his car like 100 miles away from where he lived. And there was like a makeshift campsite in the woods, but he was nowhere to be found. And they've just never found him. They've just never found him. I know, it's.
Yeah, there's just too many of those and I don't understand it. And I don't gravitate towards those because I think they'll like get me down in a way. Like the lack of closure is so difficult. Have you been listening to the new podcast, Tom Brown's Body? It's Skip Hollinsworth, the Texas Monthly true crime writer.
I love Texas Monthly.
Yeah, it's a great show, and they're only like 3 or 4 episodes in, but it's a teenager who just seemingly dropped off. Like, similar story to what you're saying.
What's it called?
Tom Brown's Body. Oh, I think his body's going to be found soon. And then the mystery actually is like, what happened? Nobody knows.
One I've been fascinated by is Chameleon. Have you been listening to Chameleon?
Yes, Josh Dean is going to be on the same month as you on my November Podcasters series. Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah, and it's so well made, and it's so interesting. I'm so fascinated.
What I love about it, I love a lot about it. I love a good white collar crime.
Yeah,
because we can laugh and we can
totally
take pleasure in the mystery, and we're not like, no one died, right? So it's just like, whew, okay, like I'm all in for this. But but it's entertaining. I mean, that one is truly like, who is this person? I have theories, and we're getting closer to the answers. Well, I mean, I said to Josh, I'm like, so is it a disgruntled Hollywood executive? I mean, that tracks, right? Because who else could make these slick kind of presentations and speak the language, the jargon, and have even a crappy concept of a film? Like, it just seems like there's some intel on Hollywood.
And to be able to get it up on IMDb, like, that's a big deal, you know?
That's huge. That's huge. And then I also just think at this point, you know, it's not that much money that the guy or gal is getting from this whole scam, but they're working a lot. So I also put forth they're kind of earning it almost at this point, because like the spreadsheets and the time that they would need to like do all this, like, I don't know, is it a scam at that point?
People who are like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to spend $15,000 on a business class flight to wherever the hell. Who would ever, like I mean, $15,000 on a business class flight, like, that just seems bananas to me.
Well, I'd have to like shove all my credit cards onto the counter and be like, please make this work and spread out against all this.
Yeah,
and my kids
puts this much on this much and this much on this much. And
wipe out my checking account. Totally. But at the same time, what I'm learning is that's really important with cults, with white collar crime, just like with murder. We really should not blame the victim because they're victims.
I know
it's really hard not to go like, ooh, like.
Well, it's hard in Sarah's case because she brought so many people in. So she is a victim, but she's also a perpetrator. You know what I mean?
This is my favorite conversation is, when does a victim in a cult become a perpetrator?
There's no way that anyone can ever convince me that Sarah didn't at some point know what she was doing was wrong before she stopped. There's just no way. She's too smart. She's just too smart. And she was too far up the ladder. And this is not to say that I think that, like, I mean, I think when you are in that level of indoctrination, like, you've drank the proverbial Kool-Aid, you know? So like the brainwashing and all of the mind control that they did on Sarah worked and she became one of them, but she is still responsible for like the women that she brought in, you know?
I think she feels that. Yeah. I mean, right. So
did I just end my chances of being best friends with Sarah?
I'll let her answer that. I don't think so. But I don't think her actions were criminal, I guess, is my thing. Because I don't think she knew about, well, she did know about DOS once she knew about it, once she was part of it. Whereas, you know, when Allison Mack, I think, has a lot more responsibility to pay for.
I agree. And I'm thinking of it less in terms of like the branding and the human trafficking, but more in terms of like the pyramid scheme aspect, where it was like, you know, you kind of know, like, I'm sorry, but like when you're at the top of a pyramid scheme, you know, it's a pyramid scheme, girl. Like, you just do.
I really believe, and this is, you know, truly and honestly, I am someone who probably would have accepted an invitation to Executive Success Program before NXIVM. Like, I'm just being really honest. So I like to believe in I guess I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt that because it worked for them and they found success in it, they believed it would be the same for everybody else.
And I'm on the record on True Crime Obsessed as saying, like, I would be that bitch that if I went out for drinks with Sarah and I didn't know anything about her, I would be at a 5-day.
Oh, like, have what you're having. So cool.
Right. I know. You want to be like Sarah.
Totally.
She is cool. She's beautiful. She's so smart. And you want to be like her. The end of episode 2, where you find out that Sarah is in DOS and she's like putting on the robes and putting on the sashes, and it ends with her like looking at the camera and smiling. I gay screamed so loud that she and Nippy heard me in Toronto. There's no way they didn't hear me.
There's no way they didn't. I believe that. Yeah. I believe that. I remember watching that scene and being like, it's funny because, you know, you could almost get away with thinking this wasn't a cult. Then the sashes came out and I'm like, oh, it's a cult. Like, sashes. Totally. I think what's also interesting about NXIVM is that there's a whole other realm and story to this that no one is reporting on yet, that The Vow barely touches on. That is the sex trafficking. Like, the branding is one thing, but the trafficking of women from Mexico and
I didn't know that. Did they really like actually like cross like international lines and go find women for Keith?
Yes. And three of them are sisters and one was a teenager when she came. And this is what, so to get back to kind of the true crime genre, like,
yeah,
there needs to be an expansion of whose story we're telling. And that's something I'm looking for more. And I see more of is just a little more people on the margins. Like, even in this story everyone is talking about, we're still like, no one's, I don't know.
That's what the CBC with Uncover does so well, you know?
Yes.
Like, they did the one about the gay man, the serial killer that was killing all the gay men in Toronto.
Yes.
The CBC did the Finding Cleo, which was all about the Indigenous women.
Indigenous community, yes.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That has been a real journey for Jillian and I this year with all of the Black Lives Matter stuff and like really hearing from our listeners of color about how they didn't feel represented on True Crime Obsessed. And
wow,
like really having that conversation with them and like and promising to do better and really like living up to that commitment like every day, you know? And yeah, I mean, that was a real big thing for us this year. That was like a really amazing thing to come out of 2020 was like, I mean, let me say that differently. I don't want anybody to ever suffer. And I don't mean that like, it's great that we learned a lesson based on other people suffering. I don't mean that at all. But I'm really glad to have like, I'm glad that if there had to be all of this like horrible shit that happened, that we as a culture were able to grow a little bit from it.
I am right there with you. And I'm so happy to hear you say this. And there was such a crack that happened and it exposed so much this year. And I thought it was interesting the way it played out in true crime podcasts.
Right? Yes. Because yeah,
I think it was scary. And I think it's very humbling, you know, to hear you say that you dealt with it the way you did and that you guys had to encounter that within your own community because I don't know. There were two choices. And to me, it was like, ignore it.
Yeah.
Or confront it and see how you've done so far, how you can do better. Right.
And we were just like, fuck it. We were like, you know, we were like amplifying Black Lives Matter all over our Instagram. And I, you know, like so often, I shouldn't say that. Not so often. From time to time, we will hear, like, I have this joke at the end of every episode of Obsessed with Disappeared, where I'm like, follow Ellen on this Instagram handle, follow me on this Instagram handle, and conservatives like me, follow Donald Trump at Joe Biden, and give generously, give generously to Donald Trump at Joe Biden. And, like, it's a joke that I make every time, and people sometimes will come for us for being political, and we do try to, like, not necessarily, like, our politics are very clear, but we try to not be, like, political, but then it's like, no, people being, like, murdered by the police isn't it's not political. Fuck that. Like we are going to use our voices. We're going to use our platform. And if people want to not listen to us anymore, fine. Bye. Go listen to somebody else.
Yes.
You know, we have a responsibility. And it was like, we were learning and growing and we were hearing from our listeners who were mad. They were mad at us and they were rightfully mad at us. And so we wanted to like reflect that and say like, this is what we're hearing and we are going to do better. And this is how we're going to do better. And we're going to show you starting today, you know?
Yeah, I do know. And I think it's the brave thing to do and it's the right thing to do. And I don't think there's any other way about it. And the other thing is to me, it's not political, but it is when you talk about police reform and brutality, because who you elect and that trickle down of policies, those are political. So then I guess we're going there. Like, I don't know what else to say. And there's no choice but to engage that topic.
I mean, the only other choice is to not engage it. And then it's like, then what the fuck? You know what I mean? I'm sorry. Am I allowed to swear on your podcast?
Yeah, you can. You can.
Cause I'm like, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like anybody who sits in front of a microphone and has at least one ear listening, you have a responsibility. I will not hear otherwise. If you work hard to give yourself a platform, then you have a platform and you have a responsibility. You know what I mean? Like you have to do it.
So how did it change your storytelling on True Crime Obsessed? How did it, and I'm sure that's hard to put into words, but how did it inform a new way of doing things?
So we are a little bit hamstrung by the fact that we recap true crime documentaries, right? So the only stories that we can talk about are ones that have documentaries made about them. And also the documentaries have to be well made enough that like people are going to want to watch them, you know? Uh-huh. And so there was a little bit of, of course, there are like white people are disproportionately overrepresented in everything, right? Mm-hmm. And that includes documentary storytelling. And so, you know, it became a little bit about really trying to seek out documentaries about people of color and even covering some documentaries that weren't strictly true crime, which we had always tried to keep to because we just felt like we just had to honor that commitment and tell these stories. And that was how, I mean, how to talk about it, you know, learning how to take criticism. That is also not an easy thing, you know, like, especially when we, you know, I think that we are successful in sometimes making people think that we sit down and record and then we just put it up on the internet and it takes an hour when really our episodes take between 40 and 50 hours a week to make one episode. Like the amount of work and the amount of people that work on these episodes is epic. And so, you know, hearing the criticism is hard because we work so hard, but then it's like there's just they're just, you have to take your ego out of it. And that was a big learning. That was a big learning curve for me too. And like that translated into the Facebook group where we had to have very honest conversations with people about things. And, you know, like I'm not, like I said before we started recording, I'm just like a funny gay guy. I don't know how to run a business. I don't know how to like, but here I am. So it's my responsibility to figure it out because it's important, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And to be working with a team who can help and support that and augment what you're doing. I'm proud of you guys. And I think, you know, it is hard. It is hard to take one for the team and to know you're losing people in the process, but hopefully, you know, more than
can
losing
I
people.
Say something about that? I don't give a shit. Yeah. I don't give a shit. If you don't like what I have to say, then don't listen to it.
Good riddance.
Especially if, like, you know, I have said really stupid things on the podcast about subjects I didn't know a lot about, like suicide early on in the podcast. And I got schooled. And then I spent an hour on the phone with a doctor to learn. And then I went back out and redid the episode. So I'm all ears and I'm here to learn and I'm here to grow. But like, if you don't like my politics on Black Lives Matters, to you, I say goodbye. Don't listen to my podcast. I don't want your ears.
Yeah. And two things to follow up on that. I would say, you know, probably yes, good riddance. And also maybe there's seeds planted. I mean, you don't know what a person's whole journey is. So I also don't want to write people off to the point where it's like, they don't come back to reengage because maybe this is, I don't know. I'm hoping and dialogue that I'm having conversations and it's a different show than yours. Format is totally different. Yeah. I bring experts on. We talk about these. I'm not the expert, which is the best part. I can just be like, I don't know, but this guy does.
Yeah.
And we talk about these things and then hopefully it's, I quote this quote all the time. It's probably annoying people, but Maya Angelou, like we do the best we can until we know better, then we do better.
Yeah.
And that's just how I'm trying to do it. And it sounds like you too.
I totally agree. I just, you know, I come from a world where like I had to get married three times because my marriage wasn't legal where I lived, when I got married. I live in a world where like if the right person isn't elected and the right Supreme Court isn't put in place, my marriage could be invalidated. This is a real thing. I have a daughter that might have two parents that go from being married to not being married anymore. So I have fucking had it. If you don't like what I think about these subjects, go listen to somebody else. I am not here for like, I'm totally here for everybody's journey. I'm here for the learning. If you are coming with love and you don't know about this and you want to learn, wonderful. But what I'm not going to do is engage with bigots in the Facebook group or engage with bigots on Twitter. I'm just blocking you. You know?
No, absolutely. No, that's an important distinction. And that's a posture. Like there's two ways to be if you're in disagreement. And you know, what you're talking about now is nobody needs to put up with it. It's just not acceptable or okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot at stake with our next presidency. And I feel that too on a very personal level for things in my own family. So I hear that.
I meant to be funny. I thought I was going to
You are. This is fun and funny and it's great. And it's important and it's what's happening right now. Yeah. And I don't apologize for any of it. So, but this will be fun. I have a couple rapid fire questions. I don't usually do this with guests, but you seem like the perfect.
Oh, I'm guest ready. I love a rapid fire.
I'm just going to ask one and you're going to answer.
Okay.
What true crime doc could you watch more than once and why?
There's something wrong with Anti-Anne because I am going to figure it out.
You're like, forget Zodiac. This is where I'm going all in. Okay. Is there a case playing out right now that you are following and or obsessing over?
Scott Peterson, I've always been obsessed. And so, you know, he just might get a new trial because of that crazy juror. I'm kind of in the camp of, I kind of think he maybe didn't do it. So I am very intrigued to find out if he's going to get a new case, if he's going to get a new trial.
Okay. We have to park here for 1 second. Okay. I'm in the camp of, I think he did it, but don't know that he should have been convicted. And I don't believe in the death penalty. So I was glad to hear that that was taken off the table because I don't like our margin of error there. Frankly, I'm just comfortable with it. So I'm all for him getting another trial or an overturning because I just think the trial was shit and they didn't have any physical evidence.
He's also the world's biggest dirtbag. Like I honestly, he's not a good person.
It doesn't help. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think he did it. But wait. Oh, I wanted to tell you one other thing about this. In my Yellow Tape True Crime Trivia Show, I have a category called Peterson, Peterson, Peterson. And the answer is always Michael. Oh, so every question is different, but the answer is always a Peterson. It's just which one, right? So that's fun. But I can't have that change. I can't just be a double Peterson. But anyway.
Right.
Okay. So this is where I walk the line of, you know, entertainment. Okay. Who would win a true crime trivia game? You or Jillian?
Jillian.
If you were battling.
Oh, well, no, you know what? That's a tough one. Well, okay. Give me the parameters of the game. Is it trivia?
Okay. So it's trivia. It's five rounds. Each one's a different category, but let's just say we picked one category. I mean, it's all luck, right? Who knows more about that one category?
I think I'd probably win. I think I'd probably win if it was like trivia. Anything else, like Jillian is way smarter than me. She's faster
she's
than me.
Smart.
Like,
yeah.
Anything she's... else, she'd probably win. But if it was like true crime trivia, I think I'd do pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty straight true crime trivia. So you would have a good fighting chance. Okay, well, those were my rapid fire questions. But one thing I always ask my guests before they go is what is keeping you up at night right now?
The election. I mean, oh my God, the election. I just like, I can't, I just, the election, that's it.
Yeah.
What's keeping
you
up at night?
So close. Oh my gosh. I think the state of our country, and that's tied into the election and just the serious fractures right now, the fact that people believe in QAnon,
which
my cult experts have told me is legit a cult and very dangerous. And we should be really concerned. The spreading of misinformation.
Yeah.
Police brutality and reform that's needed. You know, just there's too
much.
How
does anyone ever sleep? How is there any sleep?
I don't know. The amazing part is I sleep pretty well, but during the
day,
actually.
Yeah.
Like a racing brain.
Yeah.
When we hit a pillow, it's like done.
Yeah,
just so I'm grateful for that. But like, we're not easy probably to be around during the day because it's like. But Patrick, I loved learning more about you and your show and your work and your point
thanks.
Of view. So new show coming in January that you can't say much more about, but we'll make sure to link to the Obsessed Network and all your amazing shows. And I just thank you for being on Dialogue and killing the small talk with me.
Thanks, girl. Sorry that I got so serious. I didn't mean to take it down so many notches.
No, I think, I mean, we have some pretty like stoic conversations here and some are super light and fun. I think ours hits a nice note in the middle. I think you feel good about it.
Good.
I do.
Well, thanks
I do.
For having me. This was wonderful. Yeah.
Thanks for doing it. And I'll be in touch.
All right. Bye.
Dialogue is a Yellow Tape Media production, audio engineered by Jason Usry and produced, hosted, and edited by me, Rebecca Sebastian. If you love the podcast, please consider becoming a diehard by signing up at patreon.com/dialogue. Other ways to support the show, follow along on social media. We are at Dialogue Pod across platforms, and you can now watch most episodes on YouTube by subscribing to my channel, Rebecca Sebastian. For more information or to drop me a note, visit RebeccaSebastian.com. Until next time, thank you for listening and killing the small talk.